On today's BizNews briefing, we bring you a Financial Times update on the Trump tariffs. DA votes against the human settlements budget. Otter's Wayne Duvenage on hope for South Africa. Professor Theo Venter on what is needed to make the GNU work. Ian Cameron on the good news SAPS budget. And Musk must keep peace with Trump for Tesla's sake. According to the Financial Times, there are just a couple of countries that have reached agreement with Trump on tariffs ahead of next week's 9th of July deadline. Let's take a listen.
President Donald Trump's so-called Liberation Day tariffs have been on pause for the last few months, but that's supposed to end on July 9th. Countries have spent the last few months racing to negotiate trade deals with the U.S., with not that much to show for it. Here to give us an update on the trade war is the FT's Amy Williams. Get us up to speed on where the U.S. is at when it comes to new trade deals. What kind of progress has been made since Liberation Day?
Well, the U.S. has been negotiating frantically and intensely with some of its biggest trading partners. And U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has said in recent weeks that the U.S. is in very serious talks with around 18 countries that looks to strike deals that could head off the highest levies that Trump has threatened ahead of next week's deadline. So far, though, it has only struck these trade agreements with the U.K., and yesterday, we got news that the U.S. has signed a deal with Vietnam, too. It's also signed an agreement with China, which is more of a truce than a deal. We haven't seen any text on that, but it has de-escalated the huge punitive tariffs that both Beijing and Washington had placed on each other earlier in this year.
We are just about a week out from this July 9th deadline. How is the U.S. thinking about these talks now with that deadline so close?
I think the U.S. will look to close as many trade deals as it can ahead of the middle of next week. But it's going to have to really work hard. A lot of these countries are demanding more tariff relief than Donald Trump is willing to give. And it's likely that we'll see the U.S. close early piecemeal deals and then agree to keep talking to these countries. So we saw that with the U.K. We've seen that with Vietnam. They've made an agreement on a couple of products and they've lowered tariffs in some areas. But the U.S. has maintained high tariffs in other areas, and countries will need to continue to haggle and negotiate over those going forward.
Since we're so close to this deadline, are you expecting the Liberation Day tariffs to snap back into place next week?
I think some of the countries will see increased tariffs next week. So Donald Trump has already threatened Japan with this. He said that he will send them a letter and their tariffs could reach as high as 30 or 35%. Japan is a major U.S. trading partner and ally and also has been negotiating quite intensely with the U.S. If they don't reach a deal and then get hit with even higher tariffs than Trump outlined as part of his reciprocal tariff blitz, then that is bad news for countries that don't reach agreement.
The DA has voted against the more than 30 billion rand human settlements budget. They allege that there is a criminal investigation against Thembi Simelane, the Minister of Human Settlements, who they say stands accused of corruption. Here's Loyolo Mpiti, DA spokesperson on human settlements.
On the 26th of August 2024, then Minister of Justice, Minister Simelane, was accused of having received a loan of 575,000 rand from the Gundu Wealth Solutions while mayor of Bulawayo, company directly linked to the unlawful investment of municipal funds into the now completely looted VBS Mutual Bank. You would think that the response to this that the president would have shown Minister Simelane the door. He did not. He asked for the report that he stayed with for 3 months, and even though the DA sustained pressure asking the president to act, He lacked courage to act and instead decided to dump Minister Simelane at Human Settlements, one of the most important departments for South Africans in our country. It seems that this president does not take an issue with the fact that the person accused of corruption sits in his cabinet and will have to look after a budget of 30 billion rand that is set aside for South Africans. The Democratic Alliance will always support the granting of funds to house the vulnerable. At the same time, fast-tracking jobs and growth to give many more South Africans the dignity of being able to buy and own their own houses. And although this budget and the department have many challenges, under normal circumstances, it would be supported. However, we sit with a minister who faces corruption allegations, who has not been accountable to the South African public, and it is because of this we struggle to support this particular budget.
Meanwhile, Linda von Tilburg on National Security News spoke to political analyst Professor Theo Fenter from Northwest University, who said that the DA and the ANC need to get together and thrash out the way forward behind closed doors in order to hold the government of national unity together in the short term.
I think the most important thing now is for the ANC and the DA to go into a kind of a bosberaad, or we refer to it also as an indaba, where people get together over a weekend, all the cell phones are taken away and you are forced to talk, so that they talk about the statement of intent, that they talk about those things that are currently harboring the relationship. And I think out of that can come a much stronger relationship about what to do and what not to do. And the most important issue is to establish a platform where things can be cleared out, a clearing house. Now, there is such a mechanism in the office of the deputy president, but it hasn't functioned. It is not working, and it is not doing what it's supposed to do. I think there must be something where the political parties, not only the DA and the ANC, but all the political parties, when new legislation or legislation that will have an impact on policy, when that is debated, to get together outside of parliament, outside of cabinet, to have a frank discussion about the ways and the means, and then go into the formal arrangements. Because the moment you're in a formal arrangement in parliament, it becomes a screaming match. It becomes a madhouse. If you're in cabinet, you're absolutely formalized. The president is chair, and there are certain routines. But if you can do it informally, in a way where you can have a discussion on equal terms, that is where you can resolve this. That has not happened, and I think that is probably the most crucial thing that must be considered by both the ANC and the DA.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In an interview on BizNews yesterday, Alec spoke to Wayne Duvenage, the CEO of Archer, on what it would take to push South Africa in a positive direction. Let's dip into that conversation.
What will trigger the really good is that we start to see a trajectory that moves in the right direction. So we've got the G20 coming now. We've seen a number of arrests, by the way, not just these, but we recently saw the Dumisani from the Crime Intelligence Center last week. Arrests there, the Alex Corr Mayan government state-owned entity arrests recently as well. So we're starting to see things happening. And I always come back to the criminal justice system, because when you start feeling safe, when you start to know that the rule of law works, is when you start investing and when you start getting confidence in a country. And these are the important things. And then when you start to accept international assistance in this regard, and we do see, you know, there are countries from Europe that are here assisting training, getting forensics expertise in systems now. These are the good things. And they become the catalysts to greater change. And then it starts happening quicker. And if we can get that ball rolling, I'm quite excited and positive. Of course, we've got to deal with education. We've got to deal with health. And this is where the politics of change comes in. And I do believe, looking at the dynamics that are flowing, and if the DA and other parties that we need, that they've shown. I mean, I'm not punting the DA here at all. But you just have to do a correlation between cities and provinces that work, that have good governance, that have clear audits, clean audits from the Auditor General, and those that don't. And it's a political divide. It's as simple as that. One entity does it better, not saying they're perfect, and others really mess it up. And if we can start to fix the optics of some of the political parties, that opens the door to more votes that will come their way, because it just feels and looks better, and it aligns with cultural lines in this country. We are diverse. You've got to start appealing to a broader market than just a single one. Then we can get there, Alec. And I'm excited about what might transpire in that regard. But it actually, everything lies in the hands of the politicians. That's where power lies. Civil society is on the outside, business, media. We're all fighting for a better country, growth in the economy, jobs, less poverty, equality issues sorted out, all of that. But everything lies in the power of the hands of the people who run this country. Those are the politicians. And yet they can't see what are such basic needs to change to fix this country, to get growth, to get investment, to deal with the challenges that we have. And the mind boggles. It's why is it so obvious to so many people and not obvious to the few that have the power to change this country? It's frustrating, I must say. But we don't lose hope. This is an amazing country. We've got great diversity, great flora, fauna, resources. You know, compare ourselves to Australia. They've got a rock and a kangaroo and a barrier reef, and yet they get more visitors than us. It's crazy. We've got so much going for us. And they're on the arse end of the world. You've got to take a few days to fly there. We overnight stop from Europe. This is madness. We must unlock our prosperity.
Staying with the positive direction for South Africa, Ian Cameron spoke to BizNews' Chris Steyn, saying he is very encouraged by the budget that is being tabled for the South African police services.
Generally speaking, we've seen that there is a massive push to better allocate resources to public order policing. Now, this is good and bad, because on the bad side, one would then think that they expect more unstable conditions or civil unrest of some kind. But at the same time, public order policing, in terms of resources, those units are very, very far behind. And a lot of them are really struggling, and it's putting those members at risk. So I think it's positive to see that over the medium term, they are getting a significant amount of resources pushed to them. They are specifically looking at better recruitment, specialized equipment, and better training, additional training, which is also fantastic. We've seen, unfortunately, that at many of the different units, people are deployed there, But when they actually had to go and work in the specific circumstances that that unit was designed for, they haven't really been trained to do that. There's a big push for further strengthening of visible policing. I've got mixed feelings on this. It's again taking close to 50% of SAPS's total budget. I think we are way too obsessed with visible policing. Visible policing does make an impact, but it's not the sustainable model for fighting, organized crime or organized violent crime like gang violence, for example. Visible policing, generally speaking, assists with some kind of, stabilizing effort. And then once those resources withdraw from an area after the deployment, things just continue as per usual again. I think a lot more could have been done to assist with the whole issue regarding promotion and grade progression of administrative staff in the South African police service. I think they've been significantly neglected. And then also, more importantly, is to look at detectives. How can we better incentivize detectives? How can we actually draw more people to want to become detectives and to keep the good, retain the good and experienced members as detectives? Furthermore, a lot will be looking at the better modernization of 10111, of the emergency call centers. This is in terms of transitioning towards more digital kind of call taking, GPS integration, etc. I personally think they have a major risk there at the moment in terms of recruitment as well, because they simply do not have the human resources they need. And then the last few things, Chris, includes a better move, and this is really positive to see in the budget, that SATS is for the first time so prominently writing about prosecution-led investigation. And this is critical to me. This is the scorpion kind of mindset that we need to have. So it's really good to me to see that they are working in that direction. I hope that they have had the relevant discussions or are having the relevant discussions with the MPA to make sure that detectives work alongside prosecutors, as it should have been done in any case. And then the last part for SAPS is the better allocation of resources for broader reforms should the SAPS amendment bill actually happen. Now, I'm not going to go into detail. Maybe the SAPS amendment bill is a specific discussion that we should have at some stage. But this bill has been coming a very, very long time, and it's something that will assist in a lot of issues, confusion, maybe legislation that's perceived as poor, even regulations within the South African Police Service. And that's why this amendment bill is critical. And obviously, you would need budgetary allocations for the relevant resources should reforms come out of that bill.
On the international front, Dan Eaves of Wedbush Securities says that Elon Musk should stop poking the bear, that is Trump. Eve says the last thing that Tesla shareholders want to see is Elon Musk fighting with President Donald Trump. Eve was speaking on Bloomberg Surveillance.
The subsidies are going to be phased out. They're going away. This was anticipated. What does it mean for the business in the meantime?
Look, I think that was anticipated. I think the bigger focus here is it's all about autonomous. I mean, when I look at 90% of the future value is ultimately going to be about autonomous robotics, and that's the future. It all comes down to when Trump came in, the goal was that this is going to be a fast-tracked, autonomous roadmap in terms of a framework from a federal perspective. So I think the worry and the reason the stock was down yesterday is that still there? In other words, does this situation start to settle? I believe it does. But the last thing as a Tesla shareholder or a Tesla bull that you want to see is Musk just putting himself more and more into that political theater, because there's really no upside from a Tesla perspective.
Don't you have to push back your expectation for any kind of regulatory framework that would be beneficial to Tesla in the near term to get the robotaxi program off the ground?
Yeah, it's a great question. It all comes down to like China, because look, this is an arms race going on. So Trump knows Waymo has obviously been very successful, but still five cities, very expensive cars. The horse in the race is going to be Tesla in terms of to scale with what China is doing. So it comes down to, in this U.S.-China battle, Tesla just like NVIDIA, is actually a chip on the table. So I do believe that you will actually continue to see this fast track despite this sort of back and forth that we're seeing. Look, it's essentially like a junior high situation, right? They went from BFFs, now sort of enemies. But I view this as something where for Tesla, it's going to be a near-term overhang that I do think dissipates.
Are investors pushing back more? Because this has been a faith-based stock for a long time. Suddenly we're getting deliveries that still don't matter, at least in your eyes or a lot of people's eyes, if you believe this really is a robo-taxi story. At what point do people say, really? We're not seeing it with the shares down 25% so far this year. And frankly, they're in an industry that is under a secular challenge at a time of a lot of potential headwinds and a lot of political drama.
Yeah, look, I think sentiment is as negative as I've seen it in a few years relative to especially the actual business deliveries. You'll get one this morning that's definitely going to be a pretty soft delivery number. But it does come down to, in terms of the prove-it situation, does robotaxi scale? I believe it's 2025 season next year. You start to see that in terms of geofence within Austin, that expands. They go to more and more cities. Then investors are like, okay, as an AI play, when you think about physical AI, NVIDIA and Tesla, to me, are the best pure play physical AI plays. But it's proving it. And now just like if you look at Apple and Tesla, they're in the penalty box from an investor. If you think about even Mag7, where on the other side, of course, you got Godfather of AI Jensen, you got Redmond and Nadella, you have Meta and Zuck. So there's a separation going on. Apple and Tesla is right here in that penalty box.
I want to come back to when you said at the start, to John's opening line, about how you think Musk and Trump both need each other. Doesn't Musk need Trump a lot more?
Of course. I mean, we've said that. It goes back
to... So why does he keep poking the bear? Does that not unnerve investors?
Of course. Look, the last thing you want to see is him poking the bear. It comes down to, like, there's nothing good going to come down in terms of him doing it. And I think that's why every time he does that, it just creates this cycle in terms of Trump, you know, going back. And it's the last thing you want to see, because as we've talked about a lot on the show, obviously took huge steps back from Doge, Trump administration, took on a life of its own, but now he keeps shots across the bow. It's not what you want to see.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back on Monday with more context on both the local and global front. Thanks as always for joining us.